Thank you for coming. As the title connotes, today we'll be discussing from the tzavo, from the will, the ethical will of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. We don't have left over the other will that he wrote. I don't know if there was another will. But the main tzavo that he wrote, which is close, a little less than 100, between I think about 70 or 80 something, short, terse comments that he left over in his tzavo, and his ethical will, and we'll discuss today if this will was meant for all of Klal Yisrael, was it meant particularly...
define what ethical will means.
We'll get there. And what the ethical will means, who is it written for, who is it meant for, was it meant forever, was it meant for a particular group of people. Most of us probably don't know if we descend from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid or not, and we'll discuss that as we go along. We'll get there in a moment. Let's just first, we're going to tie it into the parsha. Sometimes the Shir ties into the Parsha, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I have Siyata Deshmaya, and I don't think it's going to tie into the Parsha, and then somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged it that I figured out how to tie it into the Parsha. So in this week's Parsha, will come landing in in a couple more days on Shabbos, or we're actually landing now already, landed on Shabbos afternoon. We said Yaakov Avinu, as he's getting ready for Esav, and he's preparing for, he doesn't know what to expect, and he says the famous words, katainti, and there's a machlekes actually in our Masorah, what the proper trup is on the katainti, the more popular one, it goes up, katainti, but some have, they go down, katainti. Okay, but the point is that it says, katainti, Yaakov Avinu says, I'm diminished, mikol hachasod, mikol emes, meaning he feels that he's used up his chusim from all the goodness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already done for him, and he's afraid that he won't be able now to be successful against Esav. So these words, katainti mekol hachasodim. So the Gemara Masech, the Shabbos in Source 2, brings Rav Yanai, right before the brackets, actually, a couple words before I started the bracket, says Rav Yanai bodik va'ovar. Rav Yanai, before he got into any boat, would check the boat and then go into the boat. Make sure there was no holes and no problem. Now, if you would ask me why I would check the boat before I went in, I would say because I was afraid if there would be a hole in the boat, I would sink. That's not why Rav Yanai checked the boat. He wasn't afraid he was going to sink. The Gemara says, Rav Yanai letamei, that's where it's bracketed off. Rav Yanai, according to his own logic, why he checked the boat. The Amar, he says, La'olam al yamid adam b'mokam sakana. A person should never put himself in a situation of any type of danger. Lo'ymar sh'oysen lo'yneis. And then say, don't worry, I'll be protected. Miracle. The miracles will protect me. Kashema ain't oysen lo'yneis. Maybe the nace won't happen to him. V'im oysen lo'yneis, and if a miracle does happen to him, minakin lo'y mizuchu yosef, it'll diminish, it'll subtract from his merits that he already has accumulated. Amar Rav Chanin, my Kara, what pasuk is this based on that a person should not rely on his own zechusim? The pasuk in this week's parsha we just said, katainti mikol hachasodim mikol emes. I'm diminished. I've become small from all the various kindness and the goodness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed upon me. So Rav Yanai wasn't afraid that he was going to sink per se because he had a lot of zechusim. He just didn't want to lose his bank account of zechusim, and so he specifically checked every boat before he went in. And I'm assuming in his day they didn't have the big cruise ships, that would have been quite a job. Whatever type of rowboat or whatever it was that he was traveling in, for whatever reason, he made sure that it was safe and secure before he got in. So we see from this Gemara, based darshing this pasuk, that is an idea. There's other sources from it as well through the Torah. We know we have to shmartem ol nafshei seichem, we have to be careful not to do things that put us in any type of risk or danger. But the Gemara here brings this pasuk of making sure we don't lose any of our zchusim, and therefore to be careful we don't put ourselves into any situation of danger. So now, what defines danger? Of course, there's a certain health risks we're all familiar with. We have the Surgeon General's warning on many products that you see today. They're warning us about the health risks. Of course, that's included in sakana. And then there are various sakanos, various things that are more of what we'll call a spiritual nature, things which we can't necessarily quantify in a scientific way. We can't prove in a laboratory or by any type of formula what the danger is. But the Gemara tells us many times certain things are a danger. We shouldn't do the spiritual dangers. How about things that we don't know? The Gemara didn't tell us, but we have the Rishonim telling us that we shouldn't do it. And it's not clear why we shouldn't do it. And the prime example of this is many, going to be many of the examples that are enumerated in, the will of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. So who was Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid? What was going on? This is as follows. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was a Rishon. He was a Talmud, a prime student of the Ri HaZaken, the elder Ri, which was from the main Bali HaTosfos. So he's from the Tekufa, the time period of the Bali HaTosfos. He's even quoted in the Tosfos in Baba Metzia. So he's from that caliber of Bali HaTosfos. From his main students were from that we know of, were the Ar Zerua, the Rekeach, the Smag. Many of the early Rishonim are from the students of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and they quote the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He wrote what we know, what we have from him today is a sefer called Sefer HaChassidim, which we're not really going to be quoting from so much today, which is full of dictates and laws and ideas of things we can do that'll make us all be pious individuals. Some of them are quoted la halacha, many of them are not. And then we have the tzava, the ethical will. He left over certain statements without explanation that people should not do the following, which we'll get to in a moment. Again, so that the ethical will is just basically telling us different behaviors and actions that we should not do without any reason. Now, there's another sefer that we don't have today, it was lost, that was written by Yehuda Achaz. That's called the Sefer HaKavod, Sefer of Honor, of Glory. We don't have that today. The Rishonim quote it. And it seems like in that Sefer HaKavod, there are more explanations for some of these terse or seemingly, you know, strange statements that Yehuda Chassid made that we don't have full explanation for. Seemingly in this Sefer HaKavod, some of them were explained, but again, we don't have it today. It's been lost for hundreds of years already. And so it's the poskim are dealing with many of these things that Yehuda Chassid left us and trying to figure out what he meant and how he meant and how it applies to us. So we're going to start with, we're only going to really focus primarily on two of them today. Again, like I said, there's, I think, over 70 or 80 of them, because the two we're going to discuss today are ones that the poskim deal with extensively. So in source number 3, we're going to start as follows. It's the 23rd point in the will. It says, La Yisa Adam, a person should not marry Isha, a woman, Shashma Kishem Imoy. So a person should not marry a woman with the same name as his mother. For example, if a person's mother's name is Sarah, he should not marry a woman named Sarah. Or Shmoy Kishem Chamav, a person should not marry a woman whose father is the same name as his name. So let's say his name is Avraham. He should not marry a woman whose father's name is Avraham. V'im Nasa, and if he marries such a woman, Yishana Shem Ha'echad, one name should be changed. Ula Yesh Tikva, perhaps there'll be hope. So again, should have marry a woman with the same name as your mother, should have marry a woman whose father is the same name as you, and if you did it, change the name, maybe there'll be salvation. Maybe something will be okay. Now,
whose name gets changed?
Whose name gets changed? The Chassan's name, the Kala's name, the mother-in-law's name, the father's name, it's not clear. What is the danger that we're talking about here? It's not clear. Is it beneficial? Not beneficial to change the name. It says, Ulai, maybe it'll help. So it's a lot of ambiguity over here and exactly what's going on. So we're going to see, we'll discuss now how many of the primary posts can deal with this psak, this statement, we'll say, and how far they take it, la halacha ula maisa. Many of us might be familiar with certain people who change their names. I have a sister-in-law who added a name. Her name was Leah, and my mother-in-law's name was Leah, so she added another name, Atara Leah, and that's how she goes by now, Atara Leah, to be concerned for this. But we'll see that some people agree with that, not everybody does. So let's take it step by step. So the Tshuva Noi de Yehuda, of course, the Noi de Yehuda came, 800 years approximately after Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, maybe the last 600 years after Yehuda HaChassid. So we'll see how he deals with it. So he was asked the following question. A student of the Noi de Yehuda writes to him a shaila and says, there is a boy we're looking into for a shidduch for my sister-in-law, and he's a very chashuv boy. He's a big ben Torah, and he was sick a couple of years ago. And when he was sick, they added a name to him. It's not clear. Let's just make up, for example, they added the name Rafal. So now his name is Rafal Maisha, let's say. And the father-in-law's name, my father-in-law's name is Maisha. So we're asking, do we have to be concerned that they share part of the same name? Again, for argument's sake, we can say the father-in-law's name is Maisha. The future potential son-in-law's name is Rafal Moshe. Do we have to be concerned for this tzava, for this will of Yehuda HaChassid, and maybe we should not agree to the shidduch? So Noi de Yehuda writes to him and says, in the beginning of the second paragraph here, he says, Ahuvi Tam in source 4, my beloved student, Lule Ha'avoscha, if not for my love to you, I wouldn't respond to your question at all. Because this question is not rooted at all in the Gemara. There's no Gemaras or clear to poskim who discuss it. And he says, I'll give you a principle you should know for life. Here's the rule for life. Da, he says, where it's underlined, Da Talmide HaChaviv, know my beloved student, V'yu Devarim Halalu Chakukim Aluach Yibecha, these words should be etched on your heart, L'zichroin, for remembrance, HaKlal HaGadol, this great rule, She'ein L'kol Chachamim, there is no right to any Chacham, She'achar HaTalmid, who came after the signing and the sealing of the Gemara, Rishus, he doesn't have permission, Lomar Dovar Neged HaTalmid, he has no permission to say something against the Gemara. Any rabbi who comes along and says something which is even the slightest different than a Gemara, we're not going to include him in our list of appropriate rabbis. However, we have somebody who's already qualified and bona fide and known to us as being somebody who is an appropriate leader for Klai, so a belief suffix. Shekasa b'sefer, and he writes in his sefer, Dover ha-soyso divrei ha-talmud, something which is against a Gemara, chayavim anu, we're obligated, limshchuni nafshin, to stretch our souls, to stretch ourselves, letaris, we have to figure out what he meant, because obviously this person already has a good track record, and he's known that he's well-versed in Torah, and he's accepted, so if he's saying something which is seemingly against Chazal, we have to work our brains out to figure out what he means. Maybe he was speaking in a particular circumstance only, or maybe he was only speaking to his family pratis for a particular private matter. The Gemara is talking about the rest of the Jewish people. So he's saying, first step is that we have a Gemara. Now, again, this idea that we just quoted from Yehuda HaChassid of not marrying someone with the same name, woman or father-in-law, etc., there's no specific Gemara against it, but the Yehuda then goes on, which I'm not going to read together right now, to other things in the Tzava, other things that Yehuda Chazal talks about, which are against Gemaras. For example, the Gemara says, one example that the Gemara says, it's a mitzvah to marry someone to marry their niece under certain conditions. Rabbi Yehuda Chazal says, you shouldn't marry your niece. That's specifically against the Gemara. So we're not going to discuss the halacha right now today, but you see that there's something specifically he's writing against the Gemara. Okay, another example, he says that you shouldn't have two brothers marry two sisters. We have Gemaras which seems to say, or Bechizda's two daughters married two brothers. So you see things, Lahedja, so you see two sisters marrying, right? Because two of Bechizda's daughters married two brothers from a different family. So you see that they married. And other examples. There's nothing specifically against this tzava, this aspect of it, of marrying the same name of the daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law, but in general, he's saying we have to understand if all these are said for everybody or not. So on the top of the next paragraph, he says, "Aval ha'emes yoyre darka." The truth is, ki achasid lazari achar of tziva. This will is written specifically for the family of Rabbi Yehuda Achasid Dori Doreis. Ki rabu achkotchai Rabbi Yehuda Achasid saw with his divine wisdom, shezaroi lo yatzliach bezivugin keila. He realized that his descendants particularly won't be successful in these marriages. He's not contradicting any Gemara, because the Gemara is talking in a general sense, and the Gemara is talking about a general sense, and the Yehuda Chassid talking particularly to his family. So first, Noi Yehuda lays down for us, according to Noi Yehuda. Again, it's not clear from the Tzava if this is for everybody or not. The Noi Yehuda is suggesting it's only for the family. And then he goes on to say, in this particular case, he's not so concerned anyway, because, like we said, the case was that there was a name added on. I think I messed up the case. At the beginning I said, right, let's just speak about it. The case was that there was a boy who was sick and added a name. The added name was the same name as the father-in-law. I think I said a different case before in the beginning. So let's speak out a case again. Okay. The father-in-law's name, let's say, is Rafael, for argument's sake, and the sons and the potential sons-in-law's name is Rafael Moshe. So now they added on the name because he was sick, right? So now the added on name is equal to the father-in-law's name. I think it's the opposite case it could be before, so that, let's just clarify that. So the added on name is the same name as the potential father-in-law's name, and that, like Yehuda says, that's not a problem at all, because the only problem there might be anyway is the shame ha-etzem, the real birth name that he had. The added name is now his new name, but that's not something to be concerned about, he says, because we can't be there. Yehuda Chassid was worried about that, because then what's going to happen is, you're going to have a guy, Yankel, who marries a girl whose father's name was Moshe, whatever, right? And then Yankel gets sick, and they decide to add the name Moshe onto him. Now suddenly they have to get divorced because they added a name later on. He says that's not tenable, that's not a possibility. So therefore, it can't be that Yehuda Chassid is ever worried about an added name. He's only worried about the Etzem name. He says, then he adds over with very sharp words. All the way at the end, at the bottom of the left column, he says, Umilvad calls that, besides everything I wrote to you, which I don't think it's a problem, lefi michtavcha, based on your letter, rotzach chasoincha lehischate nimtsur v'merabonon, your father-in-law wants to marry off his daughter to a Talmudic scholar, v'shoimer mitzvah, and that itself is a mitzvah. And he says, v'tomahani al roi v'oilam, I'm bewildered by the people, by the world, shaloseis bitam la'am aretz, they don't have no problem marrying off their daughter to an am aretz. Who push that some? They have no problem with that. And they don't have any problems withholding their daughter from marrying an Amoret. And there's a Gemara Mufereshes against marrying. A person should be careful, if he's able to, not to allow his daughter to marry an Amoret. The Gemara is very harsh terms about it. It's as if you're giving your daughter over to a wild lion if you let her marry an Amoret. So for that Gemara, people look away. They don't care about that Gemara, so to speak. And now, to be worried about the tzavar of Yehuda Chassid, worried about, he said, you have your priorities messed up, and you should be more concerned that your daughter marries, the girl marries a Talmid Chacham. If this boy is a Talmid Chacham, don't worry about anything else, and Shalom Yisrael, they shall live happily ever after. So this is the Naidib Yehuda writing very strongly that, in his opinion, the Tzava was only for the descendants of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and of course, if it's going to be a Talmid Chacham, for sure you don't have to worry about it, and any other added names, he says, also should not be a concern. That's how the Naidib Yehuda approaches the Tzava so far. The next... Okay, that's a good question, and we're not discussing that right now. Okay, but let's just, in a general sense, if you have an Amaretz, someone is completely ignorant of all Torah laws. Let's say it like that. Easy definition for now. Okay. Otherwise, we'd all be in a lot of trouble. Okay. The next source on the next page, in number 5, is a tshuva for the Shem Aryeh. And there, he brings a fascinating story. It's not directly related to our case, but in a similar vein. He's discussing, in general, various things that are in the Tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Some of them are, so to speak, very strange. He says, Dvarim Zorim Ma'oid, some very strange ideas about you can't live in certain cities, which obviously it's hard to us to know exactly what those cities are today, and other certain places where a Rav shouldn't live, certain places where other people shouldn't live. He says, they're very strange. We don't understand what they mean. And he brings down a story. It's a middle where I marked it off. He says, in the times of the Maharsha, the Shem Aryeh lived in the late 1800s. The Maharsha was 100 or so, a little more than that, right? 200 years before him. He says, in the times of the Maharsha, there was a rabbinical conference at one point, and he heard this from an older Rav, Mordechai Margolis, who told him this story. And he says, the Maharsha was at this conference, and at this rabbinical conference, in case you want to know what they were discussing at the conference, they were discussing how much we have to be makbid, how much we have to be careful with the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And the Maharsha, the great Maharsha, which we all know from his Pirush on the Gemara, stands up on his feet and says, Ani mivnei bonav, I am from the descendants, son after ben achar ben, from the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He had this yichus, he knew his yichus. Ubetzava hanal, and in this will it's written, Shelo yikra ish mizaroi es benoi lo Yehuda v'lo Shmuel. In this will, one of the things Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid writes, even though his name was Yehuda, he writes that none of his descendants, none of the people, should name their children Yehuda, or they should not name their children Shmuel. Says the Maharsha, V'ani zeh shmi Shmuel, my name is Shmuel, and my father's name was Yehuda. So again, Maharsha gets up on his feet and says, they're discussing, the Rabbanim are discussing how much we have to be careful on the Tzava of Yehuda HaChassid. One of the things there are, the names of people, and Yehuda HaChassid writes not to have Yehuda, not to have Shmuel. Maharsha gets up and says, I'm a descendant, I have a Yichus, and I'm telling you my name is Shmuel, my name is Yehuda. So we see that even from descendants of the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid himself, they were not necessarily being makbid on keeping all the words of this will. And then the Shem Aryeh goes on to discuss why not? Why didn't they keep it? He says maybe it's only because for the immediate generations after Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, was it for all the future generations? Or maybe that was only if you name it after a particular Yehuda, not if you just name the name of Yehuda Stam. So the Shem Aryeh is dealing back and forth why the Maharsha's family wasn't careful on it. But we just see the story of the Maharsha was that for whatever reason, it wasn't accepted for all generations that they had to be careful about the Tzava. Now, okay, so far we have the Naidib Yehuda who's saying it's particularly for the family. And then we have the Shem Aryeh who's saying even within the family, not everybody, they're not keeping all the words necessarily of the will. The next source in the Pischei Tshuva, this is located on the page of the Shulchan Aruch in Yeradeya, in Simen Kuf Tes Zayin. Simen Kuf Tes Zayin is a simen dedicated to various things which are usher because of sakana. Different things that the Gemara tells us are usher of sakana. We spoke about this once a little while ago, and we spoke about keeping food under the bed and Ruach Ra on different foods. That's all discussed in Simen Kuf Tes Zayin. So the Shulchan Aruch there, that you see that even from the family, they weren't being careful necessarily to keep the words of the Tzava.
That means what? So,
okay. It seems like that they weren't being careful on it.
And nothing happened.
He wasn't saying that the family was incorrect. Mashah's father wasn't Amaretz. He wasn't saying this, they're doing something incorrect. He's just saying that, you know, Mashah got up and said that the minig in the family is even not to be makbid. The Pischei Tshuva, again over there, when the Shulchan Aruch is discussing things which are forbidden because of Sakana, so he brings in this discussion about being careful of things from the Sefer of the Tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. So where it's marked off, he says, V'ayim b'tzavas Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, many things you have to be careful from because of Sakana. And his prime example is the main discussion we're having now, which is a person should not marry a woman who has the same name as his mother, or shouldn't marry a woman whose father has the same name as him. He says, I am b'tshuvas chachmas. So I'm looking at the Sefer Chachmas Adam. Klal kuf chaf gimel din yagimel. This is where it's underlined. Shekasav du dafka kishay mishuloshim. The only problem is not when it's one and two people have the same name, I mean, not just that the father-in-law and the potential father-in-law and the potential son-in-law have the same name, or when the daughter-in-law and the potential mother-in-law have the same name. He says, Kigayin, it's only when it's three times over, when it repeats itself three times. Says Kigayin, for example, Adam Sheshmai Ruvain, a person, man number one's name is Ruvain. V'chasnayin, he has a son-in-law, he already took a son-in-law whose name was Ruvain. So Ruvain number one has a son-in-law, Ruvain number two. V'mikach oid chasin, now Ruvain number two, it's his turn, it's his daughter's turn to get married. He should not take a son-in-law with the same name Ruvain, because they can have Ruvain to the third power, and that is going to be a problem. And he says this is supported in the words of the Sefer Chassidim, in the meaning in the there's two things, like we said in the beginning. There's Tzava, there's the will of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and then there's a much longer Sefer called the Sefer Chassidim, which has thousands of things Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid said. And there it's clear in the Sefer Chassidim that he's only talking about when it repeats itself for a third time. Now, again, it doesn't give a hezbo, it doesn't give a lumdus to why it's a problem if it repeats itself in the third time. But nonetheless, that's the Chachmas Adam Paskins. He says, V'oilim, time is that people make a mistake. They think only if it's within even two people, it's a problem. But the Chachmas Adam Paskins, this way the Pesach Teshuva quotes, that it's only an issue if it repeats itself three times. Now, this, of course, doesn't go down without a fight. There's a Tshuvas Maharsham. I didn't put it down on the paper. Maharsham writes, he quotes from the Belzer Rebbe Zatzal. He said he heard the name of Belzer Rebbe that the Chachmas Adam misread the Sefer Chassidim. Now, I didn't put the whole Sefer Chassidim here because it gets very technical. And just to give you a little more confusing cases, the Belzer Rebbe learned that the Chachmas Adam was only talking about a case as follows. You ready? Let's follow this case. You have a man, ready? Six, but I didn't copy this whole thing down. So I'm just speaking out of case. You have a man, let's call him man number one. I don't know, whatever we'll call him. Man number one has a wife and they have a child. Okay, now the man number one's wife passes away. Okay, now she's not around. Man number two, the child of man number one, I'm going to try to keep the case as easy as I can, got married, has a child, his wife passed away. Okay, so now we have the mother and the daughter-in-law both passed away. Okay, man number two went ahead and remarried a woman, and we'll call her Rivka. Okay, good. Man number three got married to a woman named Rivka. Okay? Now we have, so again, a lot of people passed away in the middle here. Now, man number one, the Zaidi, wants to go ahead and finally get remarried, and he wants to marry a woman named Rivka.
It's a lot of Rivkas.
In one family, for example. So there, the Belzer Rebbe said, that, according to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, would be a problem, because sure, that, even though no one's really related there, but since within the same family, three times over, the name keeps coming. I don't know. I can't tell you why. I'm just telling you what the Belzer Rebbe. That's how the Belzer Rebbe understood the Sefer Chassidim. But still, that's not, according to the Belzer Rebbe, that's not what the Tzava is talking about. So the Tzava was talking about even to repeat it once. In Sefer Chassidim, he had another problem even to repeat it three times. Okay, I don't want to repeat that again because it was a little bit complicated. But that's the basic idea. So we just have a massive machlokes now going on between the Litvish Shapayskim, the Chassidish Shapayskim, exactly what case is a problem, but no one still is telling us the big question of why. What's the concern? Let's move on now. Hopefully we'll get to the why as we go along. The Pischei Tshuva later in a different chelik of Shulchan Aruch and Evan Ezer in Simon Beis says, first he quotes the Chassam Sofer. He quotes the Chachos Adam again, that idea. And he says, where it's underlined, he says, I saw in the Chassam Sofer that there was, again, a similar to Noid view this case, where there was a good bachar, a good yeshiva bachar, a chashev tamach chacham, who wanted to marry a woman who had the same name as his mother. And the Chassam Sofer said, don't worry about it, because there's a principle, it's on the end of the second line where it's underlined, says, man de loy kapid loy kapdinam bahadeh. There's a Gemara which discusses the idea of zugos. There are certain things the Gemara says that if you do it in pairs, it's dangerous. You shouldn't do certain things in pairs. But the Gemara then concludes that that's only for someone who has this idea that he's worried about. That he has this, I'll use the word superstition. That's an English word. It doesn't mean it's not superstitious. There's a reason for it. But you only have to be concerned about it if you're makbid on it. If you're not makbid on it, you don't have to be concerned about it. So it says the Chassam Sofer to this yeshiva bachur who was potentially going to get married to a woman with the same name as mother, says, you don't have to worry about it because you're a ben tayor. You have the schus to protect you. And if you're not makbid, you don't have to be makbid. The only danger could be, says the Chassam Sofer, if you're makbid on it. Then they bring further from the Sefer Kerem Shlomo, which comes after the Chassam Sofer, but he brings that there was a story with the Chassam Sofer in a different case where a man came to him, wanted to marry a woman with the same name as his mother, and there the Chassam Sofer told this woman, just change your name, don't have the same name as your potential mother-in-law, and you don't have to be concerned that it is all. So let's say her name was Sarah, now we'll call you Rachel, whatever it is. You don't have to be concerned anymore. And they ask, so why did the Chassam Sofer and the Tshuva previously tell his Yeshiva Bachar for his, to change his potential Kala's name? He says, because that guy, the Yeshiva Bachar, had the Schus HaTorah. So anyway, the Schus of learning Torah is going to protect him from any Sakana. The second story where the person came, he was just a regular guy. He wasn't necessarily involved so much in Torah study. So there, he didn't have the Schus of Torah. So then he told them to change the name. Okay, so here we have the Chassam Sofer ready. You know, you see, so the Chassam Sofer is worried about the Tzavar of Yehuda Chassid. He's worried about it. And he's telling you either you have the schus of Torah to protect you, or you change name. But he didn't dismiss it like the Noi Debi Yehuda dismissed it, or like the Marsha seemingly dismissed the whole idea. Don't be concerned about it because it's only for family, or maybe even some of the family was concerned about it. The Chassam Sofer was concerned about it and figured out a way how to circumvent the problem, either by changing the name or by the schus of Torah. If the potential chassan is a ben Torah, you don't have to worry about it. However, well, it doesn't say he was an Amaritz, because that might be another problem, but it just says he wasn't fully occupied in Torah study. Okay, I don't know if the opposite of Tal Chacham is an Amaritz necessarily. No. You could have, there's some, definitely some gray area there.
No.
Okay,
has to be.
Let's see. In the next source, in source number 8, is a Tshuva from the Chida. And the Chida writes about this Tzavar of Yehuda HaChassid, that a person should not marry a woman with the same name as his mother. He writes, the second line, at the end of the line, it says, "Hagam sherabim loychashu." Even though there are many people that are not concerned about this, ani hatzayir, I, the young one, the Chida writes, or isi ma'isim shleitzlichu bezivugam. I am an eyewitness, says the Chida, to people who are not careful about this idea, and they married women with the same name as their mother, or the son-in-law and the father-in-law had the same name, and they were not matzlich. He brings a story where he knows a woman that they married into the chassan had the same name as the father-in-law, and they got married. Shortly afterwards, the chassan passed away. Then the kala eventually had a hard time getting remarried. Eventually, she got remarried. Then she got divorced. And then she passed away without any children, Rahman al-Tzlan. So he says, this is one of the stories he has of bad effects that came out of people that totally ignored it. So now we have the Chida. Comes the Chida along and says, we have to be concerned about it. Even though he heard that people are not worried about it, we can't just dismiss it, you know, by saying that maybe it's only for the family. There's some spiritual issue going on here. He's not explaining the why again, but he's saying in his rabbinic career, he's seen detrimental effects happen to people who are not being careful in this tzava. Okay, so again, we're having a lot of back and forth between the poskim, understanding the severity of the tzava. Comes along the Sanzerov in the Divrei Chaim, the Tshuva's Divrei Chaim. And he writes, also he's responding to someone who asked him that he has to be careful about not marrying a woman with the same name as his mother. He says, starts off similar to the Noig de Yehuda, and he says, it's very hard to really get to the depth of understanding what's happening over here because we don't understand what the issue is. But Chas V'Shalom, he says, to negate anything that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid says, because he was a Rishon, like we said before, Rebbe of the Smag, and the Arzurua, and the Rekech, and the other great Rishonim, and he's somebody part of our Masorah. We can't just negate what he says, so we have to walk the tightrope over here, walk the balance to figure out what exactly do we have to be worried about, what we don't have to worry about. He says it could be, and this he says in the paragraph, the third paragraph, it says, ach, he says it could be that the Gemara, which discusses certain things, which seemingly is a mitzvah, sometimes the Gemara itself pulls back, and it gives an example. He says, really, we know when if a person passed away without any children, so his wife falls to Yibum. That's the mitzvah in the Torah. That's the best thing to do. The second best thing to do is chalitza. But really the best thing to do is yibum. However, the Gemara says, at a certain point, ro, they saw she'en hadar mechuvon l'shem mitzvah. People who are going to marry their sister-in-laws for the sake of yibum, we're not doing it for really for the pure sake of the mitzvah. They had other motives mixed in. So the Gemara says, chazru lomer mitzvah chalitza kodna chazal instituted that people should do chalitza, and they stopped doing yibum. He says, so sometimes we see the Chazal get up and say, even though the best thing to do is Yibum, the Torah says, but we're now going to promote the second best because people are not having the right intentions. Rabbi, so he suggests, sure.
Let me ask you, so that's a common thing that happens in the Gemara?
No, it doesn't happen commonly at all. Meaning the Torah gives us two options what to do, Yibum and Chalitza. Yibum is the best option, Chalitza is the second best option. The Gemara, it says, at one point Chazal realized that people were not doing Yibum for the right intentions. And therefore, Chazal now promoted and said we should only do chalitza and stop doing yibum.
But it's so not across the board.
Right, no, that's not across the board. But the Divrei Chaim wants to say that perhaps Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid Beruach Katra realized that even though there are some unions and some marriages that are permissible from the Gemara and allow, or even recommended from the Gemara,
for example, marrying your niece, but the Rabbi Yehuda Chassid realized that in the future generations, this is not, people are not going to do any of the Shem Shemayim anymore, and he told, therefore, that's why he was telling people not to do these things anymore, even though we don't have clearly the Rishonim passing like Rabbi Yehuda Chassid necessarily, but once he said it, perhaps this is his reason. However, he says, even though he's suggesting this, he's not fully convinced that this is the reason, and he says, but the Maisa, on the top of the next paragraph, he says, Ach machma shedover zeh suffik, since the Maisa, it's a suffik, im lezaro kivein olo, if he had this, if this was intended for his descendants or not. So we say, b'chayagavna, he says, in this situation, we'll say, im alocha roifefes biyadecha tseyu re'ei heicha olam noig. Go out and look, see how the world is being noig, and realize, meaning we'll see from the actions of people, what developed, what minig developed. Again, because this is not from the Torah. Obviously, if it's a Torah law, we can't do this. But in something which is a custom, so we'll see if the people adapt to the custom. You have to be careful for it. So he writes, the Sanzerov writes, approximately 150 years ago, that in his country, the only thing they're careful about is that a woman would not get married into a family if the mother-in-law had the same name. But otherwise, he says, people are not being careful about the other edicts of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid and the Tzava. The reason why people are particularly married about the Kala, not having the same name as a mother-in-law, is because that's also brought down in a different sefer called the Mishnas Chassidim. I was not able to look that up inside. But the Mishnas Chassidim, which has many things that are also al pi Kabbalah, there it's mentioned as well. Excuse me. And therefore, the minigis became to only be makbid on this item of not marrying a woman with the same name as your mother, but the other items from Yehuda Chassid Sava, he says the minigis were not makbid on them. So here we have kind of, now we're from the first extreme we started, the Noid Yehuda and others saying that we don't follow the Tzava at all, maybe it's only for the family. Then we had the Chida and others saying that we have to follow it, and even the Chassam Sofer seemingly saying we have to follow it, and they're trying to figure, Chassam Sofer is giving etzes how to avoid the problem. Chida doesn't give any etzes, any advice how to avoid the problem, but he's saying it's a problem. The Divrei Chaim is saying that other parts of the Tzava we don't have to worry about. The only one we have to be worried about is this one, not marrying a woman with the same name as your mother, because that's brought down in other Sfarim, Kabbalistic Sfarim as well. Why, again, is not being stated yet. But therefore, Divrei Chaim Paskes, we should be makbid. Now let's come to the Tshuva of Moshe Feinstein. So Moshe Feinstein, I don't know if this is the only place, but it's definitely one of the only places in the Tshuvas of Moshe Feinstein where he quotes the Sanzerov. Moshe Feinstein, a great Paisik, does at times quote other Chassidish Paiskim, but most often does not. And I don't know, I'm not sure how many other times in his Tshuvas he quotes the Divrei Chaim. But over here in this Tshuva, Moshe was asked the same question about a man who wanted to marry a woman with the same name as his mother. This was written sometime in the 50s, this Tshuva. And he was asked whether or not he has to be careful not to marry this woman or not because it has the same name as his mother. So he says, he quotes in the beginning of the Tshuva, he says, first of all, I have a hard time responding because like the other Paiskim said, it's not clear in the Gemara this discussion. There's no source in the Gemara for this question. And he says, but Lamaisa, I've seen in the Tshuva of the Sanzerov and Divrei Chaim that he quotes it from the Sefer Mishnas Chassidim in the name of the Arizal, where Moshe says that it's going to be Yasser. So he says, but the problem is as follows. He says, first of all, he says, if there's a difference between the mother's name and the potential Kala's name, between the English and Hebrew name, that's already sufficient. For example, let's say the mother goes by name Rachel, and the daughter-in-law's name is technically Rachel as well, but everyone calls her
Rachel.
So he says, that according to Moshe Feinstein, that's the different name, because even though technically in Hebrew her name is Rachel, the same name, but since she only uses her English, she goes by Rachel, no one calls her Rachela or Rachel. So according to Moshe, first of all, that's already considered a different name regarding this halacha, because again, there's no clear Gemara on this, but since it's not exactly the same, it'll be sufficient. And then he says, that which they bring down from the Chassam Sofer, which we quoted before, that you should change name, that's good. He says, you have to keep in mind that, again, this is written in the 50s, he says, for people who are going by their English name and they say they change their Hebrew name, he says that's ridiculous. For example, you have a woman who goes by the English name of Bessie, right? That's what she goes by. She goes by Bessie. Now her Yiddish name is Basha, let's say, right? And then they're going to call it, now they'll say, okay, now your new name is going to be Basha Leah. But everyone's still calling her Bessie. Says Ramesha, if they're going to change the Hebrew name but keep calling her regular English name, that's not going to help for anything. Meaning, says the only time that a name change is going to mean anything is if they're going to call her now by the new name. Meaning, if she went with her Hebrew name, she always went with Leah, and now they're going to call her Rachel Leah, so fine. That's something to talk about. But Ramesha says, I have a hard time believing that people, In this country, Moshe writes, again, it's in the 50s, right? Everyone goes by their English name in this country. Just because you change the Hebrew name doesn't have any meaning and any bearing on the situation. But again, he says, if they have a different name in English and Hebrew, and one of them goes by their English name always, then Moshe says you don't have to be concerned for it. But he says, and even if you tell them, maybe they'll change, maybe, let's say they both went by the same English name. They both named were Rachel, and they both went by Rachel. Right? Mm-hmm. And now one says, okay, so I'm going to start going now by Bessie, whatever, she'll change her name. Ramesh says, it's a joke. No one's going to start calling her a new English name because all her friends, and it says on her birth certificate and everything, all her, you know, official documents, that her name is Rachel. So just because now she says she'll change her English name, Ramesh says, I'm not convinced that's going to be sufficient because he doesn't think that's really going to stick. But then he ends off the last paragraph, very important, the last paragraph on the left column. He says, ubechlal, in general, Mikivan shal chasen ba'atzmai, since the chasen in this case that came to him, himself, and the kala herself are not makbut on it, don't worry about it. Meaning, in this, what the shayla was, the mother was nervous about it. The parents were getting nervous about their children getting married. But the kid said, we're not concerned about it. So to be a chayagavna arminan, Ramosha finds he writes, in this case we say, man de loy kopet loy kapdinan, whoever, like the similar to the same thing that Chassam Sofer applied this principle, if someone's not makbid, we don't have to be makbid for them. Just because the mother-in-law is makbid, don't let the mother-in-law get involved in the situation here. If the young couple's not worried about it, Ramesh says, don't worry about it. The concern is not for the mother, rather the concern is for the new couple. Since they're not makbid, not to be worried about it at all. And therefore, Moshe Feinstein again paskins that if there's a difference in the English Hebrew name, that'll be sufficient. If they're going to change the name, Moshe says he's just nervous, it's not really going to work because people are not really going to take to the new name. But he says, anyway, the only concern is if the couple's concerned about it. If the parents are concerned about it, then we tell them that let the couple be. If they're not makbid, don't have to worry about it. So Ramesha obviously is passing here la'alacha. Also, he doesn't seem to be overly concerned with the tzava as going to be a problem. And he's giving all these etzes how to avoid the problem. There's another tshuva for Ramesha where he discusses the tzava. I didn't put down the paper, a different issue. The tzava also talks about that a person should not wear the shoes of someone who passed away. You have a Yankel Shmera passes away, you can, you know, they distribute all his belongings, the family or people take it, whatever it is, but no one should wear his shoes. That's what Yehuda Chassid writes. And the Ramesha, the Ramesha Feinstein was asked this in the tshuva, do we have to makbid on it or not? And he writes there that we don't know why Rabbi Yehuda Chassid said it. Perhaps it's because we're afraid that the person died from a contagious disease, and we're afraid that maybe his shoes, for some reason, have some germs left in it, or something of that nature. So that's why maybe he's concerned. But Rav Moshe Feinstein writes as well that many dvarim from the tzava, we don't know the reason, and if we can explain the reason, then maybe we can be makbid for it. But if we can't explain the reason, he says, "Loy lahachmir amashalekatam." If we don't have the reason given over to us in Mesorah, we don't necessarily have to be makbid. Now, let's move on. Okay, so they have that minig in the family. That's good.
The hat and the shoe.
The minig. Comes along the Torah to Mima on this week's Parsha and says, comes to answer the big question, why? Why is this going? Until now we're discussing, this is source 11 on the bottom. Why? Until now we're discussing so many things which are also because of Sakana, seemingly some heebie-jeebie, some mystical problem going on here. Torah to Mima suggests two very practical reasons, number 11, two very practical reasons why it's going to be prohibited. He says, Avoli Nira, where it's marked off on the bottom of the right column, Avoli Nira, the Dover Zeh Aser Loi Mechshash Sakana, has nothing to do with any concern of danger, Elam Ikar Adin. There's a fundamental halachic problem here, says the Torah Tzmima. V'u'al Pima Dekaimelon De Aser Likroi La'aviv Bishmoi. It's forbidden for somebody to call their father by the name. If a person's father's name is Avram, you don't just say, hey Avram, how you doing? V'chein Aser Likroi Bifneim La'achem Shem Sheshmam Kishmam. Or if your friend's name is Avram, you can't call your friend named Avram in front of your father. It's still considered disrespectful to your father. If your father's not there, then typically the halacha is mutter, unless there's a certain case where it's called a shame ploy. If someone has a very unusual name, for example, let's say someone's name is Paltiel, not a common name, nothing wrong with it, just not a common name, and your friend's name is Paltiel. So even if your father's not there, it wouldn't be appropriate to call your friend Paltiel, because it's not a common name. It looks like you're using your father's name. But if it's a regular common name, say like Avram or Yaakov, then even if that's your father's name, as long as your father's not there, you can use that name. But says the Torah to me, Mabiyazime, since there's a halacha that a person cannot call their father by their first name, EF, it's going to be the Fizay says EF shalachasin v'chaisin or the kal v'chamaisay shemaisay and shavu nadur biyachad. You can't have any family get together. They can't live near each other if the father-in-law or the son-in-law or the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law are going to have the same name. You're going to come. You want to speak to your wife. Her name is Sarah. You're going to say, "Hi, Sarah. How you doing?" And your mother's name is Sarah. It's a lack of kibbutz. It's disrespect. It's the fifth commandment, or the opposite. If the father-in-law and the son have the same name, the wife wants to call her husband, and it's the same name. It's also it's disrespectful. It's a lack of respect. Says the Targum, that's one reason why he believes that Yehuda Chas was makbid. It was a very practical matter. You shouldn't have the same name as the in-laws and the children-in-law because they're not going to be able to interact properly in a family setting. However, he says if you change the name, perhaps it'll work, but he's not convinced. The Targum says because sometimes the second name doesn't stick. Again, let's say the daughter and the mother both have the name Sarah. So now I'm going to call one Rachel Sarah, whatever it is. But people often don't get into mm-hmm. the second name, so mm-hmm. then you're going to have back to the same problem. Secondly, the Targum suggests another very interesting reason why, practically from a halachic perspective, he feels that it's inappropriate. He says, "Apim Ashkatz." He brings a medrash in Parshas Noach. The medrash says that Anu, she'ein anu makirin es yichusenu, us, meaning Klal Yisrael today, right, the Medrash is saying, but you know, for sure it applies to us today, we don't have our proper Sefer HaYichus, all our genealogy lined up, ma'itzin es shemaisenu l'shem avaysav. We name our children with the names of our previous generations. As we know, the minig is by B'nai Ashkenaz, even by Sfarim, they do it a little differently, but the same idea is that we name our children name of our grandparents, families, extended family. So we have often in the same family, the name is being repeated again and again and again. That's a beautiful thing. You see, you meet somebody, you said, "Oh, I remember your grandfather, same name as you." It's, you know, that's a way where we mm-hmm. recognize which family people come from. So the Torah team suggests if the father-in-law and the son-in-law, the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law have the same name, so what are you going to do? You can't name them. You can't name your children or your grandchildren the same name because there's still that you can't. That name is not going to be able to be repeated right away. Maybe only generations later, after everyone passes away. So again, it's a lack of respect for the future for the previous generations, and it's not going with the minig. He says the minig is that we name after previous generations. So for these two reasons, again, for the idea of you shouldn't call your parents by their name, and for the idea that you're not going to be able to pass on the names to the family tradition, those are two very practical reasons. Targum says that Rabbi Yehuda Chassa didn't want people to marry with the same name. This totally, if you go with this Torah Tamima, it takes away any chashash of sakana, like he says. Obviously, many of the Paiskim didn't go with these practical reasons, but something to keep in mind that this is maybe some of the reasons perhaps Rabbi Yehuda Chassid had in mind or not.
What's what is the word?
Chashash, we're suspect, something to be concerned about. Okay, we have a couple of minutes. Let's just quickly end off. One more thing that's popular from the Tzavar of Yehuda Chassid, which is brought on the Paiskim. I'll try to just end on time, so I'll go through this quickly. The Magen Avraham, beginning of Hilchah Shabbos, brings down a minig that we are supposed to get a haircut or cut our nails before Shabbos. That's the Halacha Shulchan Aruch. Now, the Magen Avraham says, when does this start? Meaning, when's the first, if you do it on today, on Sunday, Shabbos is 6 days away. So that wouldn't be covered Shabbos. Magen Avraham says either Thursday or Friday. Friday is the best day to do. That's the most covered Shabbos. If you don't have time, especially in the winter when it's short, Shabbos starts early, you can already do it on Thursday. That's considered covered Shabbos. Then the Magen Avraham brings down, where it's underlined, the left comment says, V'yesh mekomos are certain places, she'ein megalchem b'Rosh Chodesh, they don't take haircuts on Rosh Chodesh, afilu chal b'yom vav, even if Rosh Chodesh is on Friday, ki kein tziv Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, because so commanded Rabbi Yehuda Chassid is tzava, again, the tzava of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid is saying that a person should not take a haircut, and the post can say, also cut your nails on Rosh Chodesh. Again, the why is not here. There's no why. He's just saying not to do it for some reason. So the question is, do we pass on this or not? The Magen Avraham says there are some places that have this custom. The Shabruah says it as well. There are some places that have this custom. So the Chida in the Tshuva, like the same Tshuva we quoted before, says he brings a Machlokas HaPoskim, if we go with this or not. He brings the Radvaz, who's an early Achron, who says it wasn't the Minig, but the Chida then brings from his father, who says it was the Minig for the haircut, but not for the fingernails. The Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky comes along in source 14. This is from the Sefer Mechitzas Rabbeinu. It's written by a student of Yaakov Kamenetsky, and he had like a notebook of all the things he asked him. And Rav Yaakov told him as follows: the third line it says, "Amar Rabbeinu, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said in Medina Slita, in Lita Loi Nogin, they did not have this minig of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, not take haircuts on Rosh Chodesh." And he also brings the truth for the Chassam Sofer. However, he says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky himself was makbid that even if Rosh Chodesh fell out on Friday, even though every Friday he would, whatever it was, trim or cut his nails, whatever it was. But if Rosh Chodesh was on Friday, he would not do it. But then he adds a very important point. Excuse me, that's only if Rosh Chodesh is one day. If Rosh Chodesh is Thursday and Friday, anytime you have a two-day Rosh Chodesh and the Rosh Chodesh is Thursday and Friday, not Friday, Shabbos, but Thursday and Friday, Then Rav Kamenetsky said, you can cut your nails on Friday or take a haircut on Friday. Why? Yehuda Chassid said you can't take a haircut on Friday, and even when it's Rosh Chodesh. Because Rav Kamenetsky explained as follows. He says, if you look, the Magen Avraham told us that to prepare for Shabbos, you should really do on Friday, and if you don't have enough time, do it on Thursday. So anything I do on Thursday is also considered covered Shabbos. But Wednesday, 2 days before, that's already a little too far removed that we don't see it directly corresponding to doing something in honor of Shabbos. You could, but it's not really a covered Shabbos. So when Rosh Chodesh comes out on Thursday and Friday, so Thursday I can't take a haircut because it's Rosh Chodesh. Friday I can't take a haircut because it's Rosh Chodesh. That means I have to take a haircut or shave or cut my nails on Wednesday. Wednesday is raised too far to be considered covered Shabbos. So in such a situation as Yaakov Kamenetsky, where Rosh Chodesh was Thursday and Friday, then he permitted even those people who are makban Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, Yaakov Kamenetsky paskin that you'll be allowed to take it on Friday because you couldn't do it on Thursday because Thursday was Chodesh. And there are those who bring a riot to this. We don't have time to go through the riot to that, but that's the idea that even, first of all, just keep in mind that in Litta they weren't makban on it. And even Yaakov Kamenetsky himself was makban, used to say that's only when Rosh Chodesh is Friday and Shabbos, or only Friday, because then you could prepare adequately for Shabbos on Thursday. But if Rosh Chodesh is Thursday and Friday, then we could be lenient on Friday and take a haircut. And the last Mara Makom, we're not going to speak through all the things right now, but the question is if women have to be makban on this as well, not take haircuts or cut their nails. So they bring from the Satmar Rav and from Chanan Kanievsky Shlita that it includes women as well. Okay, Yashkech, anyway, any questions?
Yeah. When I hear the term will,
should you have a question?